Many people today, Christians included, struggle with the Old Testament. Its stories, its themes, and its ideas just don't make sense. They seem odd or antiquated. They don't seem to relate to our modern life and the way we see the world. And for that reason, a lot of people like to dismiss the Old Testament. In reaction to that, they focus on the New Testament, where it's a lot more relatable. It's about God being loving and coming out of his great love for us. Their themes are a little bit more modern. They make more sense to our ears, and therefore it makes more sense, and we listen to it. The challenge with that mentality is that by doing so, it divorces the two testaments. It makes the Old Testament this antiquated idea that we just need to dismiss and move on, and the New Testament as the core of our theology, leading to a lot of different ideas and problems. One of the ones that stands to its fore today is that Jesus inaugurated this great feast so that we'd gather together and celebrate him, that we'd come together and he would be there and everything would be great, and that the bread and wine still remain as bread and wine. They're not the body and blood of Christ. They're just this idea, a symbol, no more significance than that. Yet if we take a moment and plunder the depths of the Old Testament, we see something different come out. Something that helps bridge the gap between the Old and New Testament. It guides us to see what Jesus did in new light, not as though he did something brand new and different, but as something that was continuous with the whole Israelite tradition. Now, although I could go to our first passage today that talks about the sprinkling of blood and this big ritual of forgiveness, I want to go to a very obscure passage from the book of Exodus. This passage is obscure because it's so very weird. So what happens is God commanded Moses to take Aaron and the 70 elders and go up Mount Horeb so they would all experience God. So he did. He took himself, Aaron, and 70 elders, went up the mountain, and they experienced God. Now the odd part is what comes next. It reads, after they had seen God face to face, they could still eat and drink. That might seem like a boring phrase to us, but if you saw in the context of the Old Testament, you'd see how very odd it is, and the fact that this is the only time it ever occurs. All the other situations in which they say, someone encounter God, or you can't see God face to face, or else you will die. The idea was, if ever you saw God face to face in whatever format, you would die. Not that you would cease eating and drinking. That was not the issue. You would die. So there must be something very different that happened here. Something so different that they had to make a point of it. They encountered God, but could still eat and drink, implying they did. Well, two paragraphs later, we start out with them coming back down, they erect the meeting tent, and then they have an event called the showbread. As they were on the mountain, God commanded them to have a piece of bread that was always in memorial of him, called the showbread. It also can be translated the bread of the presence, or my favorite from the new translations out there are the bread of the face. This bread was supposed to be kept in the meeting tent on a special table and was always there. Once a week, it'd be changed out for new bread, and only the priest could eat it, so the bread would always be there. With this connected so strongly with their experience on the mountaintop, we would assume that their experience on the mountain was they ate bread and drank wine. And therefore, after coming down, the bread remained in the meeting tent as a memorial of that moment when they encountered God fully, and this bread is now the sign of God's presence. More importantly, it almost, from a Jewish perspective, is God himself, which is very weird. As we move forward through the book of Exodus and into Israelite history, it gets weirder. Because Moses commanded all the Israelite men that they are required to three times a year look at this bread. The only commandment they were given of the things in the temple. They were commanded to see this bread three times a year. And as we see further along in Israelite history, every so often throughout the year, the priests would go into the temple and bring out the objects from the temple, the candelabra of the seven lights, the table with the bread of for the presence, the altar of incense, and it also seems to imply, but never says it, the Ark of the Covenant. They'd bring these things out of the temple and let people gaze upon them so that they would know God exists. Here are the signs of him. Do not be unbelieving, but see them. Now, there's one last part of this. So on the next to the table that had the bread of the presence would be two vats of wine. These wine vats were always kept there, And if we were to go back way, way, way back in human history, wine was always connected with gods. You would pour out wine on a spot of importance or on an altar or an offering or as a sign of asking for help. That wine was always a sign of libation, an appeal to a god for the sake of whatever you want. And so this wine was always kept there too. I hope you're seeing where I'm going with this. We have bread and wine closely connected in the temple already, leading up to now Jesus. Well, bread and wine were not that uncommon. We also had them at Passover, where the standard feast would be, you'd break the bread, hand it around, then you'd share a cup of wine, and you'd do that several points throughout the Passover meal. Jesus, however, does something very weird. Normally, it'd just be bread and wine. And to a Jewish mindset, they would know exactly what he's doing. He's offering the Passover. But then he changes it ever so slightly. And by saying the bread is his body and the wine is his blood, he then offended all his Jewish audience, who said, that's gross. We don't eat human flesh. We don't drink blood. That's just forbidden. But now, from our perspective, we see the continuity of both Testaments come together, that the bread of the presence, which was always known to be God, is now the bread that Jesus offers at Passover. He can now connect them because he is God. See it all come together. Now, this is all fun and nice and whatnot, but we need to answer a different question. Although this helps us understand the history and the context of the Eucharist, we need to cultivate something in our lives. How do we engage it? How do we recognize the fact that out of God's great love for us, he didn't just give us a memorial offering, he gave his very self. We can see his flesh and blood in a way that's not so offensive to us. We can eat it. We can be here with it. Now, the problem with the Mass is that so many of the signs and symbols that we're used to are lost on us because we just don't do these things anymore. Let me give you an example. How many of you have something immensely precious, a costless something, whatever it might be, a jewel, an artifact, whatever, something of immense value? Guessing most of you don't. We just don't keep things of that value. They're usually in museums or storehouses or something like that. When it comes to things of really immense value, we just don't deal with them. And so when we're encountering something that is unsurmountable in its value, we don't really know how to relate to it. The one thing we may have that's of great value is sentimental in value. Heirloom passed down through generations, something of an immense value to us because of some age in our life, and what do we do with them? Lock them in a safe. But what happens when this thing of immense value is given to us freely and all the time? Well, it loses its value, and that's our big challenge. We have to see the immense value of God's flesh and blood as something that we constantly renew and realize and experience in our lives as a great gift. Otherwise, it just becomes mundane, like the bread and the wine. In the same vein, however, a lot of us don't give great feasts anymore, these big elaborate meals where you set out lavish foods in so many ways and bring out the best of dishes. Some of us might, and when we do, we bring out like china and silverware, and we're used to looking at the presentation of the feast more than the food itself. We're more focused on the way the tablecloths are, or the napkins, or the china and the silverware and how nice it looks than the food itself. Now, the Mass challenges us to flip that whole thing around. Because the most important thing of the Mass is the thing that's most mundane, the bread and the wine. The vessels of their gold and grandeur and splendor are wonderful only in that they point us to see the value of the things inside them, not the value of them themselves. That's why everything is flipped. And even in the same vein, we treat things with such great respect that everything has to be cleaned up, everything consumed. We don't just say, oh, we're done, let's throw the rest of it away. We're done. No, I carefully clean the vessels. We wash them with water, making sure every crumb is cleaned up. The extra consecrated hosts go into the tabernacle, which I should focus on because that's an important thing too, that we always have God's presence with us. If we go back to the 4th century, we see the beginnings of the tabernacle, and really it should go before that, in that the early Christians realized something, that they wanted Jesus' presence. After he rose from the dead, he was kind of gone. But he left them his very flesh and blood. And so as the Christian community developed and grew, people would congregate around the consecrated bread and wine as a desire to have God close. Same thing works for us. We have him very near to us. In this particular space, he's so present that we can look at him. He's so present that we know he's here, so that we can realize that God is always with us in a physical and tangible way. So tangible that he enters our mouth. Yeah, God entered your mouth. God was chewed by you. God entered your stomach. God entered your flesh. This is the scandal of the sacrament. And yet this is where we must focus today too. Since today we are spending special emphasis on the fact of the Eucharist, Jesus' body and blood, let us take time to reflect on this mystery. What does it mean that God gave us his flesh and blood? What does it mean that the bread and wine are transformed, but yet they don't look like it? What does it mean that God loves us so much that he wants us to enter our bodies and be with us always? This is the mystery we celebrate today.